Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
We are a small country, and we cannot afford to lose any war. So when anybody, and we've said at the outset, and this is nothing new to anyone, when anybody harms Israel, if anybody hits Israel, Israel will hit back. Not just as a retaliation, but to make sure that they will never do that again.
The Israeli ambassador to Canada, Ido Moed, talking about what's to come as Israel will strike back against Iran. Don't know how, and the ambassador obviously wouldn't tell us. But Iran will pay for what they did yesterday. Later on this hour, we'll be speaking with Flor Hassan Nahum. She's a former deputy mayor of Jerusalem and currently special envoy for the Israeli Foreign Ministry. She'll be joining us on The Roy Green Show. I read an op-ed the other day, and I really paid attention to it, and I showed it to a few people, and everybody had very strong views about it. And as we talk about this, you'll understand, I think, what the views were. The headline of the op-ed is, "Ideology Masking as Leadership Killed the Canadian Dream. Enough of the gaslighting, evading, and deluding. Canada needs to be made ours again." It's a National Post op-ed by the former Chief of Defense Staff, General Rick Hillier. And the general writes, "The cure for what ails us is simple to say, but difficult, perhaps impossible to implement. Leadership." General Hillier, good to have you back on the program. How are you, sir?
Hey, Roy, I'm well. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, this op-ed is going to get a lot of attention. And let me just read the first two sentences and ask you to comment on those. "This is not Canada," quote unquote, is a phrase we hear far too often. It seems to come from every politician from all levels. It's exclaimed after every illegal demonstration, hate crime, block street, gang shooting, home invasion, car theft, and emergency room horror story. This is not Canada. Take us down the road here, General, please.
Well, Roy, I guess what I was articulating there and trying to be a little eloquent in it, I don't know if I was or not, but it's my frustration. I'm a very proud Canadian. I love my country. I served it for most of my life, really all of my adult life. I continue to serve it. I continue to love it. You know, I was born here. I raised my family here. I worked here in my profession as a soldier all of my life, as I said. And I see things happening in Canada that are destroying the Canada that I knew. And so when people say this is not Canada, well, unfortunately, it is Canada. And we appear very quiet and very complacent in the face of all those things that you just read out from that editorial and more that I described beside that. And I'm kind of hoping to maybe agitate the silent majority of Canadians who are out there quietly seeing this and equally frustrated to me to make their voice known and to demand something very, very different from what we've been doing.
Yeah, after those two sentences, it picks up momentum where you wrote, "Those exclamations," this is not Canada, "those exclamations ring hollow as food bank lines stretch longer and as hopeless thousand-yard stares of good men and women grow more prevalent, while dreams of home ownership fade, shanty towns grow, and our confidence in the future plummets. We hear the official inflation rate, but it bears little resemblance to our real-life experience. This is not Canada," grates harshly, especially when it comes from those who seem so out of touch with reality. General Hillier, you just described, in those few sentences I just read, several recurring themes on this program that we discuss, that we talk about, that we lament about, that we want answers to, that we want solutions delivered for. And it comes down to what you talk about next, and that's leadership. Leadership. And you go on to other, in your op-ed, other examples of how Canada Let me just read a couple of things. The Canadian Dream, so wonderfully launched in 1867 with the partnership that was the Dominion of Canada, is dead, killed by ideology masking as leadership, slaughtered by economic suicide posing as climate control, bled by crushing taxes, wasted on scandalous and foolish endeavors, crushed by debt that compromises long-term fiscal viability, wounded by battles over responsible care for children, frightened by our abandonment of some 300,000 Canadians, attacked not because they're bombing Gaza, but because they're Jews. I read this and I think, damn it, somebody had to say this.
Well, Roy, I did say it. And I did say it because I've been saying it to friends and business colleagues and people who have similar views for weeks and months now, maybe even years. And I get so frustrated that this great country, this country that was a founding member of the United Nations, this country that, you know, was a founding member of NATO, this country that took Vimy Ridge. My goodness, we just celebrated the anniversary on the 9th of April, commemorated it. And we seem to have forgotten that we were the great nation, and what we did in World War One gave us the confidence and the understanding that doing things as a team was far more powerful than doing things as an individual, and that we learned that some things are worth standing up for and serving for and sacrificing, sometimes to the point of losing your life. We seem to have forgotten so much of that, perhaps all of that. And right now, what I see is that lack of leadership across our nation in so many places. Leadership, I always believe, brings first and foremost a vision. What is it that we are going to be? What is it that we are all striving to become to the benefit of every single one of us? And then you lay out a strategy, the main highways to get to that vision over a period of time. And then you build a plan to get to each intersection on that highway. And then you build priorities to say, this is what each day, each week we're going to do, and this is what the public service of Canada and of each province is going to do to get there. And then you articulate that to Canadians and get their buy-in, and you keep driving towards that vision, and you listen to Canadians, and you shape the approach as you go. I don't see that. And what I see is divisiveness across the country. We're pitting the Maritimes against Ontario, or Alberta and Saskatchewan against the rest, or Quebec against somebody, or different levels of our society. And leaders have a primary responsibility, I believe, to unite our country. That is the primary responsibility. And, you know, I go back again to, you know, World War One, World War Two, Sir Robert Borden, who managed us and led us through that brutal conscription crisis that almost tore the country apart. And Mackenzie King, who in his understated way, and I don't think most Canadians, in fact, very few Canadians understand this, he was probably the greatest influencer of all time because he had the ear of Franklin Roosevelt, the president of the United States during World War II, who really was responsible for the demolishment of Nazi Germany and fascist Japan. And Mackenzie King was his influencer in a way that was incredible, powerful for Canada, because it was powerful for the world. And so we've had that leadership in the past, and Pearson and Mulroney, and yes, Jean Chrétien, who was ruthless in what he determined to do in Canada and really started to accomplish that. We've had that leadership in the past. I'd love to see it again.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about you as a military leader. And here you are, the general, and you're leading your troops. And you were in Afghanistan, leading our Canadian forces on the ground. And they trusted you. And I've talked to members of our military who were in battle, who served with you. And invariably, General, they talk about the fact that they respect you. They would follow. I had one soldier say to me, I would follow Rick Hillier anywhere. And that says to me, you provided everything that you just outlined. You provided a goal and a way to get there, and you led the way to that goal. And right now, we seem to be, in my view, and I think yours as well, we seem to be a bewildered nation. We don't really know what to think, what to believe. We turn on each other on a dime. It's very unfortunate. And you go on to write about the economic reality. We could be producing ethical LNG to power the world, you write. Canadian LNG can replace coal for power generation throughout much of Asia and the rest of the world, reducing global carbon emissions by millions of tons while creating massive economic benefits for Canadians. Our contribution and leadership to combat climate change should be enormous, not ludicrous. You'll get pushback on that, right? I mean, you will.
Well, there is lots of pushback on that. And no, you know, hey, no matter what you say, no matter what you're right, no matter who you are, not everybody is going to agree with any of those three things, if you will. But, you know, I was out in Prince Rupert in June, and I was at the liquefied natural gas processing facility being built there. It's an enormous facility. It's going to process so much of that natural gas, liquefy it, and ship it to China and other parts of Asia. And what they were saying was that because of what they were doing, in China alone, some 12 electrical generating stations would be able to convert from coal to that liquefied natural gas. And in those 12 alone, literally hundreds of thousands or millions of tons of emissions per year would be eliminated and therefore reduced overall around the rest of the world. Can you imagine if we multiply that by 100 and what an impact we could have on climate control, climate change, and do it in a massive way for the globe? Not trying to do it as a little bit of making Canada the green boy scout so we can sort of thump our chest in front of the rest of the world, but have made no real big difference. Let's make a real big difference. Let's do something like that and benefit Canadians at the same time. The world's been begging for Canadian liquefied natural gas. The world has been begging for Canada's energy, which is produced in a more ethical, regulated, and environmentally friendly manner than anywhere else in the world. And yet we're not doing that. Let's do that and make a real difference in climate control and climate change.
General, if we talk about, and I thought about this for a couple of days since I read your op-ed and you kindly agreed to come on the air with me. I thought the Victoria Cross, which symbolizes everything that we hope will come forward in people under the most dangerously stressful times, it's a recognition of that. We haven't awarded the Canadian Victoria Cross since World War II. We didn't have one until fairly recently. It was just the Victoria Cross. But you and I have talked about, with Bruce Moncour, who made most of us on this program aware of Private Jess La Rochelle. Can you just remind us, please, of Private La Rochelle, what he contributed and why he deserved the Victoria Cross, which he never received, and he's now passed away?
Roy, unfortunately, as you mentioned, we lost that beautiful young man last August, just a young man. I think he was 41 when he passed. And in my view, he passed because of the wounds that he took on the 14th of October, 2006, and the care and the medications that he had over the intervening years and destroyed his body. And we lost him last summer. On the 14th of October, 2006, in Strong Point Center, Private Jess La Rochelle, just a young man out of Nipissing, Ontario, a young man that any of us more mature adults would love to call our son, would love to call as part of our family. He's that kind of individual, quiet, you know, worked well with people, a little sense of humor, liked to have a beer once in a while, and just unassuming, no braggart. He showed up with his platoon at Strong Point Center. They were alerted an attack was coming in. They were shorthanded because one of the three sections of that platoon was back in Kandahar, and they needed to get sort of all-around defense. The Section 2IC, Master Corporal Jeremy LeBlanc, said, like, I've got to put somebody up in that mud tower as an observation post. We normally never put just one person in a post by themselves, always two minimum. That's a tactical sort of paradigm that we always use. He said, we don't have enough people to do it. Do I have a volunteer from one person to go in? Jess shot his hand up and said, I'll do it. He got into that mud observation post, a tower, and seconds after he arrived there, the Taliban attacked in force. He was on the machine gun there. He had about 800 rounds for his machine gun, and he was firing into the attackers as they were coming at him, firing at the rest of the platoon with machine gun and with rocket-propelled grenades. In the opening seconds of that fight, a rocket-propelled grenade came into the mud wall tower and detonated. Jess was knocked back against the steel-hard mud wall baked in the desert for hundreds of years, literally, and knocked back into it by that explosion. He said, when I came to after a few seconds, I looked up. He said, it was like Star Wars. There was so much light and activity going on with me because the enemy was still firing at him. He got himself back into the fight, firing his machine gun. He kept 100 rounds and didn't use those as a last-ditch defense. And then he started picking up M72 rocket launchers, which were in the tower. And they're a cardboard tube rocket launcher. You pick it up, you pop the end caps off, you extend it, the sight pops up, you fire it and throw it, throw away the tube. He started firing one after another at the Taliban attacking him, firing at one individual fighter at a time, still under fire himself. And eventually the attack, because of his fire, petered out. The platoon commander, Ray Novak, went bounding up to that spot. And when he got close to the observation post, he said, there's nobody that could be alive in that. It was absolutely destroyed. And then this little head popped itself up, and it was Jeff La Rochelle. And hey, sir, I'll provide you covering fire. Come on in. Ray went into the observation post, talked with Jess, and said, okay, you know, you've done your job here. I'll get somebody to replace you. And Jess said, no, sir. I know the lay of the land. I've got it figured out here now. Don't put somebody else through this. I'll stay. So he stayed until darkness. Then he got reinforced, I believe it was, by the platoon warrant officer. And they stayed overnight, holding the enemy off. The next morning, he went into Kandahar with the rest of his platoon to carry and help carry the body of his best friend, Private Blake Williamson, onto the aircraft for that last journey home. It was only after that he went to the medic for the company and said, hey, I'm hurting a little bit. And what was discovered immediately, of course, was that when that rocket-propelled grenade exploded at the start of the fight, and when he was slammed into the wall, he had a retina on his right eye, which detached. His eardrums were broken. He was concussed
General,
through the eardrums. And his back was broken.
It's
and
just the most incredible story.
He got back into fight.
And he deserved and earned the Victoria Cross. General Hillier, it's an honor to speak with you. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for joining us.
Roy, thank you for having me on. Pleasure to chat.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.